First of all, thank you for allowing me this privilege. And second, my voice may croak in the middle, so please forgive me. I'm just giving you a heads up. In one of the readings we had today, 1 Samuel, it began to talk about some things that stirred some stuff in me. And I'm going to quote it directly, the piece that touched me. See, I am about to do something in Israel that will make both ears of anyone who hears it tingle. On that day, I will fulfill against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from beginning to end. For I have told him that I am about to punish his house forever for the iniquity that he knew because his sons were blaspheming God and he did not restrain them. Therefore, I swear to the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be expiated by sacrifice or offering forever. That really touched me because this passage is talking about punishment. And in those times and in many books of the Old Testament, much of the punishment came in the form of violence. Animal sacrifices, stonings, beatings, etc. These forms of punishment or violence seem to come as a consequence of failing to do something the Lord told you to do. We call ourselves Christians. That's our title. And the practice of our religious beliefs is clothed in a garment that we call Christianity, and we wear it proudly. I was raised in the Christian faith, a believing of the teachings of Christianity in Jesus Christ. So let me ask you something. As I stand before you, a black woman, in case you missed that, and an openly gay woman, in case you missed that, do you ever ask yourself, how can this woman whose ancestors, and yes, whose elders, because I've done my family tree, were held in bondage as slaves, believe and practice Christianity? Let that wash over you for a minute. And if you haven't asked that question, it may be time for you to do so. For you see, many, many ills have been done. Many acts of violence, forms of punishment have been done to my culture under the cloak and guise of Christianity. We talk openly about the atrocities that fell upon the Jews, the Holocaust. Yet we, and by we, I mean the larger dominant culture in this country, I am talking about white America, we want black folks to, quote, just get over it. That was the past and this is now. Well, let's talk about what now looks like. Let's talk about that. First, let's talk about the slogan used to win the election, Make America Great Again. And under that, let's look at the visible increase in the United States of our flag being flown all over this country. I love that flag. My forefathers fought and died for that flag. My great-grandfather on my father's side was forced as a slave to fight on the side of the Confederates. But he fought. And then down the line, all the way to my father and my brothers, they have fought for that flag and our freedom. Do you know that many, if not all, of the current and new hate groups now fly our stars and stripes instead of the stars and bars, i.e. the Confederate flag? Is that what was meant by the slogan, Make America Great Again? Has that magnificent piece of fabric that many of my ancestors fought for been relegated to a harbinger of hatred and fear? It is for me, in case you haven't noticed. I see one now and I kind of cringe. And I wonder what it's about. Are you really a patriot? Are you trying to send me a subliminal message to be afraid? Since January 2017, we have witnessed through the media an increase in both police violence against African Americans. There's also been an increase in straight out, in-your-face racism and racist acts one of which I shared with you that happened to me here at Avila Beach. So let us go back a bit in history now. Let me share with you some of the incidents of racism that have touched and impacted on me. Brown versus the Topeka Board of Education. I was born and raised in Topeka, Kansas. Okay? This was a legal case that was led by the NAACP and Thurgood Marshall to desegregate public schools in Topeka and around the United States. This individual case was grouped with similar cases from South Carolina, Virginia, Delaware, and it was housed under Brown v. Education in 1954. I was born in 1953. On May 17, 1954, the U.S. Supreme Court Justice Earl Warren issued a unanimous ruling to abolish state-sanctioned segregation in the schools in this country. States all across this country drug their heels on integrating the schools. Riots broke out, and Topeka was no different. Most of the cameras and news cameras focused on Linda Brown. It was not fully implemented until 4 years later when I started kindergarten. And out the back door and across the alley was the black school, but they had rezoned, and I was the first child to have to go to the all-white school. So my mother walked me to school every day, and I thought, hey, this is great. I must be important. I mean, after all, I was only five, so I thought it was pretty cool that your mom took you to school every day before she went to work and walked. That was great. I was clueless as to why all those people were hanging around the fences saying words that I was taught not to say. Never dawned on me the danger my mother was in walking through those crowds to get through that gate to drop me off and my teacher to take my hand and walk me into the classroom. And it was several weeks before other children that looked like me showed up in that classroom. In those weeks where I was the only one, the teacher oftentimes kept me in her lap. And at recess, she would pick me up and hold me. There were people standing around the chain link fence hurling racial slurs and saying things like, God didn't mean for niggers and white folks to mix. And even though some of us kids, you know, we're five, we tried playing together, some of those other children had heard the things their parents had said, often called me nigger, pushed me down. Hence, the teacher kept me pretty close to her side. And sometimes they told the other kids not to play with me because I was a nigger. So in the tone of the Bible and under the guise of Christianity, was this little kid being punished for her melanated skin? When the other four black kids showed up, I was so happy. Finally, I could go outside on the playground and actually play. However, the teacher stayed pretty close to us, but we played in our little groups. Inside the classroom, the teacher had more control, and we all played together, and she could monitor that. But outside, with people hanging on that fence, hurling racial epithets, she felt compelled to protect me, to protect the other three. She didn't have a choice. Fast forward to 1972. One of my best friends invited me to go to Texas. Now, this is 1972, people. I'm fresh out of high school, been out for a year, got a brand new car, working at Hallmark Cards, getting ready to start college. And so they invite me to go to Texas with her and her family to their family reunion. I'd never been to Texas, so you know me. Yeah, I'll go. We were headed to a little tiny town called McLean, Texas. There were five of us in one car, all women. And both my friend and I worked at Hallmark, so I bought a little tiny Honda Civic and she got a Cutlass. White, red leather interior, red top, and we were styling in that Cutlass. Her sister and three others, all women, were behind us in her dad's car. And her cousin, an African-American male with his white wife and biracial 18-month-old daughter, was the lead car in his Buick, brand new. We were just outside of our destination when the highway patrol swooped down on the whole caravan, and we got pulled over by some sheriff's officers. We rolled our windows down and waited for them to make their way to our car. They approached the lead car first. On the passenger side, and they asked the white woman if she was being kidnapped by the nigger driving the car. She told them no, that they were married. I'm not sure that was a good idea, but she did it anyway, and that the baby in the back seat was theirs. And then the officer proceeded to approach our car, and my friend looked in the rearview mirror, and she said, "Pat, please don't say anything. Don't say a word." And I'm sitting there like, really? She said, "Let me handle this. I come to my family reunion all the time. I know this area. Just let me handle this." So when he shined the light in the car, he asked, "Where did you nigger gals get such a pretty car, and where are you going?" Well, those of you now that know me know I kind of bristled at that. And I looked up in the rearview mirror. You know, I'm in the back seat, and I'm looking up, and she's going. And I said, "Okay, Pat, self-talk here. Be quiet." So I said nothing. Nothing. They checked all the other cars, and I thought we were free to go. But then the officer returned and told us to follow them to the sheriff's office. That office was way out in the middle of nowhere. No lights. It was a little trailer. And I was a little anxious right about then. We were told that we were going to be cited for following too close, and it was going to be $500 in cash or we go to jail. Well, that really pissed me off. However, I didn't have sense enough to assess the situation, but my friend said, "Pat, please just be quiet. Please be quiet. Don't say a word. Please." I had choked back so much by then, I'm ready to just jump out of the car and get ugly. But I respected my friend. Besides, she knew the area. I didn't know where I was. I really didn't know where I was. So, as she began to look through her purse, I watched her face change. And she just kind of looked horrified. And I thought, "What's going on?" So I said, "Priscilla, what's the matter?" And she said, "I have credit cards and just like about 50 bucks on me." You know, and all the rest of us are, and I'm listening to them. All of them had credit cards, but I'm the holdout. I'm like, "I don't want a credit card." So I had $500 exactly in cash in my purse. So I told Priscilla, "I've got it. You can give it back to me. Give it to this man." And I said, "However, I don't think we owe them $500. And she said, "Look where we are at. Look around you. It's not unusual for women that look like us to disappear out here. So please, hold your tongue." I said, "All righty then." So I left it alone. I paid the fine, kept my mouth shut, and choked back angry tears. Because by then I wasn't hurt, I was pissed. This time, the color of my skin and my gender played a role in being punished. There's that word. Oh, and when we went into the little trailer to pay the fine, the sheriff was holding a Bible. And he was reading from it. And he told us that if he was not a good Christian man, he would arrest us all. Sit with that. There's that word, Christian. There has been an increase of hate groups popping up since our election. Some old have come out of the woodwork, such as the KKK and the White Aryan Resistance, and some of the new ones, right here in Los Osos, the 3%ers, have a strong toehold in this area. If you don't know what they are, look them up. And the Oath Keepers have come back to the forefront. This is an old group that had died out, an offshoot of the KKK, and now they're back. But I want you to note that these new groups are not calling themselves racists. At least the KKK was honest about it. These groups are calling themselves American Paramilitary Patriot Movements. And what do they carry? Our flag. What's attached to their cars? Our flag. And under that flag, they spew their overt racist rhetoric in cities and communities across this land. All of these groups have a common thread that runs through them. That thread is Christianity. Calling themselves Christian and using their interpretation of the Bible to justify punishment using violence, just as it was done during the African slave trade, the Jim Crow era, and the Civil Rights Movement era. Because of this, I often find myself uneasy with people calling themselves Christians, especially those dressing in militia military-style clothing and flying our American flag on their trucks and cars. This is not what I was taught that Christianity was meant to portray. Jesus broke bread with criminals, prostitutes, lepers, and of course his apostles. He was not portrayed as prejudiced or racist. Dr. Martin Luther King stated, and no, I'm not going to quote the I Have a Dream speech, because he talked about so many other things. In a sermon that he gave on July 4th, 1957, that was called A Religion of Doing, he stated that Christ is more concerned about our attitudes toward racial prejudice and war than he is about our long processionals. He is more concerned with how we treat our neighbors than how loud we sing his praises. And with that being said, let us in this congregation, in this community, continue the model that you all have showed me. I've seen it since I've been coming here, one where the term Christianity embodies the non-judgmental, the non-punitive, and non-violent way of interacting with others, of reaching out, doing and being the best we can for ourselves, for each other, and for the community at large. As I look out into your faces, I see understanding and compassion. I see resolve to change things. My analogy that I wish to leave you with is this. Each of us is a raindrop. And like raindrops, we start off as individuals. Yet as we fall into a bucket, we are a collection and we become one. Once poured out, we spread ourselves and nourish the earth and one another. Let us be those raindrops collected in that bucket and pour ourselves into the community which we serve to help meet needs and to help facilitate growth and to help facilitate change so that others that look like me feel like I do when I am surrounded by people like you, safe, loved, and respected. Thank you.